As we drove by the building, however, we saw that the basement entrance was open and no one was in sight. We signaled Hendry and kept going for another 7 or 8 blocks until we found a good spot to park. Then we began walking back slowly, keeping an eye on our watches. We were still 2 blocks away when the pavement shuddered violently under our feet. An instant later, the blast wave hit us, a deafening ka-whoomp, followed by an enormous, roaring, crashing sound, accentuated by the higher-pitched noise of shattering glass all around us. The plate glass windows in the store beside us and dozens of others that we could see along the street were blown to splinters. A glittering and deadly rain of glass shards continued to fall into the street from the upper stories of nearby buildings for a few seconds as a jet-black column of smoke shot straight up into the sky ahead of us. We ran the final 2 blocks and were dismayed to see what, at first glance, appeared to be an entirely intact FBI headquarters, except, of course, that most of the windows were missing. We headed for the 10th Street freight entrances we had driven past a few minutes earlier. Dense, choking smoke was pouring from the ramp leading to the basement, and it was out of the question to attempt to enter there. Dozens of people were scurrying around the freight entrance to the central courtyard, some going in and some coming out. Many were bleeding profusely from cuts, and all had expressions of shock or dazed disbelief on their faces. George and I took deep breaths and hurried through the entrance. No one challenged us or even gave us a second glance. The scene in the courtyard was one of utter devastation. The whole Pennsylvania Avenue wing of the building, as we could then see, had collapsed, partly into the courtyard in the center of the building and partly into Pennsylvania Avenue. A huge, gaping hole yawned in the courtyard pavement just beyond the rubble of collapsed masonry. And it was from this hole that most of the column of black smoke was ascending. Overturned trucks and automobiles, smashed office furniture, and building rubble were strewn wildly about, and so were the bodies of a shockingly large number of victims. Over everything hung the pall of black smoke, burning our eyes and lungs and reducing the bright morning to semi-darkness. We took a few steps into the courtyard in order to better evaluate the damage we had caused. We had to wade through a waist-deep sea of paper, which had spilled out of a huge jumble of file cabinets to our right, perhaps 1,000 of them. It looked like they had slid en masse into the courtyard from one of the upper stories of the collapsed wing, and there was a tangled heap of smashed and burst cabinets 20 feet high and 80 to 100 feet long, interspersed with their disgorged contents, which had spread out beyond the heap until most of the courtyard was covered with paper. As we gaped with a mixture of horror and elation at the devastation, Henry's head suddenly appeared a few feet away. He was climbing out of a crevice in the mountain of smashed file cabinets. We were both startled to see him, as he was supposed to have left the area as soon as he parked the truck and then waited for us to pick him up at the rendezvous point. He quickly explained that everything had gone so smoothly in the basement that he had decided to wait in the area for the blast. He had flipped the switch to the detonator timer as he drove the truck down the ramp into the building so that there could be no chance of any difficulties which might arise causing him to change his mind. But no difficulties arose. He received no challenge, only a casual wave from a black guard as he pulled into the basement. 2 other trucks were unloading at a freight platform, but Henry drove on past them, stopping his truck as nearly under the center of the Pennsylvania Avenue wing of the building as he could judge. He had a hooked-up set of delivery documents to hand to anyone who questioned him, but no one did. He walked past the inattentive black guard, back up the ramp, and out onto the street. He waited by a public phone booth a block away until 1 minute before the explosion was due, then placed a call to the newsroom of the Washington Post. His brief message was, quote, 3 weeks ago, you and yours killed Carl Hodges in Chicago. We are now settling the score with your pals in the political police. Soon we'll settle the score with you and all other traitors. White America shall live. Close quote. That should rattle their cages enough to provoke a few good headlines and editorials. Henry had beat us back to the FBI building by less than a minute, but he had put that minute to good use. He pointed to a few curls of lighter grayish smoke, which were beginning to rise from the tangle of smashed file cabinets from which he had just emerged. And then he flashed a quick grin as he dropped his cigarette lighter back into his pocket. Henry is a one-man army. As we turned to leave, I heard a moan and looked down to see a girl, about 20 years old, half under a steel door and other debris. Her pretty face was smudged and scraped, and she seemed to be only half conscious. I lifted the door off her and saw that one leg was crumpled under her, badly broken, and blood was spurting from a deep gash in her thigh. I quickly removed the cloth belt from her dress and used it to make a tourniquet. The flow of blood slowed somewhat, but not enough. I then tore off a portion of her dress and folded it into a compress, which I held against the cut in her leg, while George removed his shoelaces and used them to tie the compress in place. As gently as we could, George and I picked her up to carry her out to the sidewalk. She moaned loudly as her broken leg straightened. The girl seemed to have no serious injuries other than her leg, and she will probably pull through all right. Not so for many others, though. When I stooped to stop the girl's bleeding, I became aware for the first time of the moans and screams of dozens of other injured persons in the courtyard. Not 20 feet away, another woman lay motionless, her face covered with blood and a gaping wound in the side of her head. A horrible sight, which I can still see vividly every time I close my eyes. According to the latest estimate released, approximately 700 persons were killed in the blast or subsequently died in the wreckage. That includes an estimated 150 persons who were in the sub-basement at the time of the explosion and whose bodies have not been recovered. It may be more than 2 weeks before enough rubble has been cleared away to allow full access to that level of the building, according to the TV news reporter. That report and others we've heard yesterday and today make it virtually certain that the new computer banks in the sub-basement have either been totally destroyed or very badly damaged. All day yesterday and most of the day, we watched the TV coverage of rescue crews bringing the dead and injured out of the building. It is a heavy burden of responsibility for us to bear, since most of the victims of our bomb were only pawns who were no more committed to the sick philosophy or the racially destructive goals of the system than we are.